Hello, welcome to Holden Village. Today is Monday, September 17th, 2001. This afternoon in the fireside room is Lola Dean. Today's session number is DEL 2001-01, and it's titled Elder Hostel, Book Discussion of Stones from the River by Ursula Hagee. Let's listen in.
Three options of things that you might think about, you might want to do, and I can guarantee you all three are lots of fun. I've done all of them in my time, so we can talk about that downstairs. Phil, have you read the book?
No, I'm waiting to see if I'm going to like it.
Oh.
About a year and a half ago.
Sorry. Okay, well, we're going to do this together, so. Is there somebody else who needs to get in here? I have one little request.
The name tags that we did.
Yeah.
We did Jeff's name backwards. It's Jeff Grant, not Grant Jeff.
Yeah,
okay. We'll get you a right one, Jeff.
Yeah, so I'll be either in there or
okay.
Here.
Great. Thanks, Bert. For the rest of the elder hostlers, we have... is that a word? Elder hostlers?
Yes, my kids used to say that.
The hostel elders. For the rest of you hostel elders, we have two new members of the group have joined us today. I forgot your first name, but your last name's Wagner.
Right, Elaine Wagner.
Elaine Wagner. And Jeff Frank. Did I got it right? Okay, so regardless of what it says on his name tag, we're going to fix it. Okay, because right now he's Frank Jeff, aren't you?
No, Grant.
Grant Jeff. Okay, anyway, it's backwards. So we will take care of that. So the rest of you, please introduce yourselves to them, and we will have the address list. Now we know who we are. You're the last two to come in.
We came in today and we don't have name tags.
Oh, for Elder Hostel? Mm-hmm. Oh, that's interesting. Okay. Who are you?
I'm Ruth Miller. Miss Dorothy Griffin.
Were you on our list? I hope. Maybe
no.
I have name tags upstairs
for
you.
Proof of purchase.
Great. Wonderful.
Needs to take the loose.
Well, okay. Will you talk to me right after? Okay, we'll get you straightened out. We'll get you name tags, and I'll also give you schedules. Okay, so you can have your kindergarten tags along with the rest of us. Okay. Today we're going to start on Stones from the River. Last year and the year before and this year, for some reason, I seem to have chosen 500-page books. Now, I'm not really sure why I do that, but it does, 500 pages a day does move us right along. And it is a commitment. I know most people don't choose 500-page books to read for leisure, but anyway, you're stuck with me. So... And it turns out that I had forgotten how apropos this book is to what Dan is talking about at 8:30 each morning.
Yes.
And I think those of you who have started the book or who have read the book are really finding that to be true. For those of you who haven't started the book, there are more copies in the bookstore, and Jeshua would be very happy to sell them to you because he's got quite a few and he doesn't like to pack up returns. So if you don't have a book, be sure you get one, because we are going to use the book pretty intensely by turning to pages, and so I will be referring to specific pages as we go through. And I do expect this to be a book discussion. This is not a book review. I'm not going to tell you about the book. We're going to talk about the book together. So hopefully that's going to work well. And be sure and feel free to just enter in at any time. I will tell you a little bit, or maybe I should say, how many people have managed to get through the first 100 pages? Okay, good. All right. Okay, so we'll take it a little easy today, and I'll get you through the first 100 pages, and then you can go back and take that. Then we'll do, as I say, 100 pages each day. It sort of breaks down very easily into chapters. Look for the chapter that's closest to the next 100-page break. Yes,
is
Julian?
Is 100 pages the hardest?
Is the what?
Most difficult.
After we get to explaining about it, I think it'll make it a little easier for you.
Yeah, we're reading aloud to each other.
Are you?
It's
okay.
Hard to do 100 pages.
Yeah, that is hard to do when you're reading aloud to each other. When you're reading on your own, you know, you tend to skim a little and kind of get on to the next part if that part's not so interesting. So just take what you can from the week and go home and read it to each other afterwards if you want to. You know, whatever you get out of it is probably going to help. And as I say, it really does tie in very much with what Dan is talking about. So I think we'll get a bird's eye view, which I think is very appropriate for describing Trudy, of what was happening in Germany between 1915 and 1952. But before we start on the book, I don't know how many of you have ever heard of Ursula Hegge before, but she is a resident of the state of Washington. She teaches at Eastern Washington State College in Cheney, which is right near Spokane. And she lived in Germany until she was 18 years old and then moved to the United States. And I'll just pass this picture around because I always kind of like to know what does that person look like who wrote this book. And this is from 1994, 95 when this book first came out. She wrote this book based on memories of an aunt of hers. Actually, it wasn't a true aunt, but a woman that had been very close to her, who was able to tell her what it had been like living through that time period in Germany. And it was very painful for the woman to do. And I don't know how many of you know people who lived in Germany during that time. Our neighbor was an American girl at the age of 5. She and her mother went to Germany to visit. Her mother was a German national. And they got caught in Germany. And she still cannot talk about those years from the time she was 5 until she was 13 and they were able to get back to the United States. So even though she was not caught up in the kinds of things that many people were, it was a very painful time for most people living in Germany. And many of them, as we know, people who have been through an experience like that have a great deal of trouble talking about it. This aunt of hers had a great deal of trouble telling her about it, but was finally able to do that. And unfortunately, she died as her copy of the book was on its way to her in Germany. So she never got to read Ursula Hegge's book. But I think we're indebted to Ursula Hegge for giving us one more view of what Germany was like at that particular period in time. The reviews of the book, it's not an easy book. And getting every year I seem to pick a book so difficult. But it is not an easy book. It's a painful book to read at times. And so don't feel, you know, like, oh my gosh, you know, what's going wrong here? Why can't I get into this? With all of us together, I think we will get a lot more out of it. And each of you will have an insight that will be valuable. So just remember that, okay? All right, so shall we start? Trudy, yes, go ahead, Marilyn.
I have a question. Somebody said it was a true story. This woman wasn't a dwarf, was she?
No. The story is true, but not necessarily the dwarf part is true.
Okay.
The circumstances are true, and what was happening is based on fact. But no. But
that isn't, is she?
No.
Okay.
No.
Because this picture, I've got a different picture on the back of mine than.
Oh, that's possible.
And
oh, really?
And it looks like it could be possible that she was.
She, you know, well, she could have. No, as far as I know, she's not a dwarf. But why did she choose a dwarf to tell the story?
Just because she wanted to show that something was different, but we all feel different from, we all feel we're different than everybody else around us.
But for her, being different was really difficult, wasn't it?
It's a wonder she survived.
Yes, it is.
You know, the others who were, you know, the man with no arms who was
shipped off, and they never heard from him again. Or the boy who, well, the one who was fat did come back, didn't he? Come back, yeah.
But that's true. In Germany, anyone who was different mm-hmm. was disappeared. Any other thoughts about the dwarf idea?
She says at one point that people talked as though she weren't there. So she was able to hear all the secrets and being a storyteller herself.
She critical part of the book, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Information is power.
And she was a bit psychic. She kind of knew these people mm-hmm. so well that she knew what they were thinking. Mm-hmm. What they were doing.
She had premonitions, didn't she? That came out. Okay, well, why don't we get started? What do you remember what they called a dwarf?
Zwerg.
Who's German? Who can say it right? Zwerg? It's coming. Some of you Scandinavians should be able to.
Zwerg.
Okay, see, I know. Zwerg?
Zwerg.
Okay, now that's the way it would be in Swedish.
How
is it? It's Z-W. E-R-G.
D.
Yeah, Z-W.
Zwerg.
Zwerg. Okay, now we all got it right. Okay, in the very first pages of the book, we get an overview of the things that we're going to find in the book itself. And on page 11, if you could all turn to page 11, on the right, at the very top, we kind of start partway down. We get this synopsis of her life and what she is like. Let's see, who likes to read? Everybody likes to read. Who would like? Okay, why don't you start with, let's see, how do we get started here in the middle of a paragraph? Why don't you just start at the top of the page? I think that'll do it. The first paragraph, that big paragraph there.
Okay, well, I have part of a sentence at the top.
Yeah.
That's okay?
Yeah.
And she saw herself as a very old woman and simultaneously as an infant, as if her past and future were at opposite ends of a taut rubber band that someone had let go of for just an instant, causing her entire life. Every minute she had lived and would live to coil in on itself and touch where she was that moment in the barn. And she knew that she'd be able to see that way again. She watched herself pull her mother from the earth nest beneath the house, dismantle a section of the stone wall in the cellar, and dig a secret dirt tunnel to the Bloss house, stroke her lover's back with both hands, and feel a fine oval of hairs at the base of his spine as the night sky swirled around them, recoil from the heat of the flames that spurted from the broken windows of the synagogue and showered the school, and the terrestrian behind them with sparks the color of the fabric star Judenstern that her friend Eva Rosen would have to wear on her coat.
So we get a real overview of what we're going to be seeing and hearing and reading in this whole 500 pages in that one short chapter. Now, does that make you want to read on, or does that make you want to put it back on the shelf?
Yeah, put some perspective to it. It shows us that the person that the book is about is Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
In a time when the
she has a Jewish friend anyway.
A Jewish friend. Uh-huh. Is at in a time when Semitism was a normal thing in Europe.
Right. It gives us a good setting, a good sense of where we are at that particular point. So the book starts in 1915 with Trudy's birth. And who wants to describe her mother?
Her mother's sister-in-law described her as very different.
Very different. What would we, Rudy's mother, Trudy's mother, has the child, and she does not want to hold the child. She is distanced from the child. The child looks not terribly abnormal at that point, because dwarfs might look different. They don't, that difference grows as they grow. There's several kinds of dwarfs, and Phil, do you want to just mention the different kinds of dwarfs that exist, because I think she's probably an achondroplastic. She has a large head and short limbs.
Well, the true drawer, which is just the absence of pituitary hormone, and they're the most common by far are the achondroplastic, mm-hmm. which is just the long bones that are
short.
Mm-hmm. They have normal sized head and normal sized torso virtually.
Yeah. So. She complains a lot during the book, in the book, about the fact that she's so stubby. I mean, she's got short legs for one thing, but her trunk seems to be broad, and that, and her head seemed to grow.
It, proportionally, the trunk is broad because the limbs are so short.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So chances are she was what we call an achondroplastic dwarf.
She mentions that her head's the same size as George's.
Yes. Remember, they measure it.
Yeah, because it's just that she hasn't grown yet. Mm-hmm.
But she tries to keep her head from growing because it looks big. Do you remember that? Well, let's go back to her mom. The mother is apparently a beautiful woman and had dressed beautifully and was a very, she and her father, the husband and wife, were a very popular and good-looking couple who had grown up in this small town. But when the child is born, what would we call what happened to her today?
Postpartum depression.
Postpartum depression, exactly.
Yes, I think she felt extremely guilty. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
She's being punished for something.
Why was she feeling extremely guilty?
Because she did an affair.
She had an affair when Leo was off to the war, didn't she? And that came out when she feels the little stones that had apparently embedded when she fell off the motorcycle. Do you remember that part? What a secret. This is a book of secrets. Lots and lots of secrets.
Well, when you ask a question and someone answers, why don't you repeat the answer so we can hear it?
Why don't you move up here?
I'm not talking about for me.
Okay. How are people doing with hearing?
They can't hear.
Can't hear.
People are saying no.
Okay, everybody speak up.
Talk louder.
Right.
Okay. Okay. Maybe if we close the door, that would help too.
Was the guilt compounded by the fact that she assumed that, or Trudy assumed that Leo was not her father?
No,
it does.
Okay. Well, she had the meeting with Trudy and explained to her about the stones in her knee, and Trudy said, "I understand what that really means." Mm-hmm. And the mother told her about the motorcycle accident, what they had done when they had gone out to the dike.
That's a point. I thought that too was the case.
That was the guilt thing. Mm-hmm. Leo was probably not her father.
That's what I had.
Well, except that there's the point that states that the child was conceived on the Russian overcoat, remember?
The day he came home.
Right.
And when she meets her cousin, whose mother is Leo's sister, she talks about how much they look alike.
Mm-hmm. The child looks like George, wasn't it?
The two kind of Robert.
Robert and that's right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. Anything more about the mother? Oh, there's lots more about the mother in this first 100 pages.
It's just that she suffered. She went into some of like a permanent depression and even psychotic kind of behavior, because she would run to escape from things and hide herself. She would run away because she couldn't face what was, she couldn't face her family, what was in her family.
She was very clever.
Yes, she was clever.
When they'd lock her in the room. And
she figured out how to get the door back open by
pushing
the key through and pulling it back on the piece of paper under the door. She also had a habit of taking off her clothes and walking down the street. I guess that probably didn't go over too well in 1915.
And I went to church.
It wouldn't
today. Yes, Julian.
Didn't the book say, before she had her psychotic break, that the neighbors had noticed that she was a little bit nervous type person.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe, I think postpartum depression mostly doesn't go into a full psychosis that lasts for years.
Not for years, usually.
It might have been the other way around. She was psychotic, and then depression pushed her into mm-hmm. it.
Yeah, very possibly. And they didn't have medications like we do now.
Leo's sister was the one who said, well, she always was a little different.
A little different. How many people in your communities in the early years were a little different? We still have one.
I couldn't understand why she died. What was that about?
I think she was mistreated at the asylum.
Yeah, that was probably...
It sounded as if she got a pneumonia.
Yeah, or something, because uh-huh. it seemed like all of a sudden she was dead with something that wouldn't necessarily cause it.
Well, yeah, why, let's see, that would have been, well, this was 1915. Mm-hmm. That was the year of the flu. Was it 15 through 17? 18? Okay. Well, let's see, Trudy was born in 1915.
And
she
died
when she was 3 or 4 years old. So I think our timing is right.
But she came home with a broken wrist one time, too.
Yes.
So to me, I mean, what's happening in the institution.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, they didn't know how to handle, I don't know that we still do, but mental illness was very difficult and was simply locked up. And if people became violent, then they were usually restrained. Mm-hmm. And many accidents did happen. So, but the poor thing didn't last long, did she?
She told her, Trudy, that she would come back. And that I couldn't quite figure out how she knew she wouldn't come back.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think she thought she would come back.
The mother, when she went? Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was interesting, when you think about a child of the age of 3, if it's possible to have the kind of memories of being in that attic room with her mother, you know, if a child really would have those memories. But some children, you know, do have pretty strong memories from that age.
She seemed to spend a lot of time, too, telling about the drugged state she was in, like when she came back the first time after she'd been there, mm-hmm. how she acted like she was walking through deep water and, mm-hmm. and everything. And it took her like a week or two so that she could talk with Trudy and everybody. Mm-hmm. And she begged them not to send her back. So.
The father seemed to love his wife a great deal. Did you mm-hmm. get that, mm-hmm. that
so
sense?
Very caring.
Mm-hmm. And also very caring of Trudy. Mm-hmm. You can't help but like Leo Montag. He seems like a nice man. Plus the fact that he runs a pay lending library, which endeared him to me, would endear him to you too. We tend to like books. But he was in the war and came home early during the war with this leg that had been damaged and probably still had shrapnel in it and was limping and never did get over that. One of the things that he did in this first period of time that endeared him to me even more was Trudy was having a very bad time, and we'll get to that in a few minutes. And what does he do but bring her a puppy in a basket? Remember that? And that was, he was a man I think that probably didn't say a lot, but from what the glimpse I got, what was your impression of him?
I can picture him riding his bicycle with one leg and the other leg
sticking out.
Mm-hmm. He also, it's hard I think for us to understand what a lending library was like in that situation, but they didn't have public libraries, probably, and so anybody who wanted to read came to the lending library, and that's where you got your books. And books weren't as certainly readily available as they are for us. So the lending library was a very important place. So he probably saw most of the population that came along from this town of Bergdorf. Let's talk about Bergdorf just a minute. Let's go to page 17. Can you visualize Bergdorf? I've not been to Germany, but I've been to other towns that kind of, I think, might fit like this. But on page 17, the first paragraph there after the few lines on top. Who could read that? Starting with the side. Okay, thank you. Loudly.
The side walls. Mm-hmm. The side walls of the Montague's house were less than an arm's length from the walls of the adjoining buildings. The Weilers on the left, the Blaus on the right. Herr Blau was a retired tailor, and Frau Weiler ran the grocery store. The facades of the three narrow houses were white stucco with a row of bricks set below the windows, and above the high doors and the foundations were built from great smooth stones that had come from the bed of the Rhine. Most of the other shops and businesses in Bergdorf were also on the streets closest to the church square. Hansen's Bakery and the Beauty Parlor, the hardware store and the milliner's shop, two taverns, and the open market.
Okay. That's better.
Okay.
So we have, now does it say what the street itself was made of? I kept thinking it would probably be cobblestone, but. And it doesn't tell us how big the town is, but it, to me it didn't seem very large, did it to you?
No.
Small town? Because they walked out to the farm. So the farms were not very far away. And who were some of the people that we met in the first part of the book? Were any of them, did any of them stay in any of your minds at all? Or did you mark any of them as being people that you wanted to comment on?
Well, Georg's mother, Frau Weiler, who wanted a boy, and she had him in her late years, and had a boy, and so she dressed him in dresses and wouldn't cut his hair.
That was something, wasn't it? And what happened to Frau? No, that was Frau Weiler. What happened to Herr Weiler?
Well, there were different variations of that story. He took off because he used to go to the tavern or to the beer garden at night, and one variation was that he took off while he had a chance. The other one was that he drowned in the river in a drunken condition. So.
Uh-huh. Yeah. She said he was on his way to church.
Yeah. Yes.
Yes, Hillary.
Going back to Dan this morning, he mentioned the fact that the agitation that caused Hitler with all the confusion involved partly class distinctions. And in the book, it tells about one man, I can't remember which page, whom they had to defer to because he wasn't of the same class. Mm-hmm. So they had a class society then.
Right. And they do talk, the Weilers or Weilers or, I'm Scandinavian, I'm not W is Z, okay. The little boy and the, say it again.
Georg. Like in the Sound of Music, you know?
Okay.
In Austria Georg. Or in Germany, George is Georg.
Georg, okay. He was Trudy's first friend. And that, she didn't have many friends. And at first, well, in this part of the book, we could count them on two fingers because it was Gerhard and then Eva. Rosen. We have two Jewish families that are quite important in these first 100 pages. Thank you. They were a family that were very wealthy. And in the second 100 pages, they're going to come back in again more importantly. You're going to start to see this building. The men come in and talk to Leo Montag, and one of the things that they all say is they can't understand how they lost the war. So we have this very definite statement. They cannot understand how that happened. We have two churches. There's no Lutheran church, sorry, but there seems to be a strong Catholic church and also a monastery with nuns. And then we have the Jewish synagogue. So we have the two Jewish families that are brought up in these first 100 pages, however Julian says it, and Frau Dr. Rosen. Now they were an interesting family, weren't they? Did anybody get to read that far about the Rosens? Who would like to describe them? She was a female doctor, first of all, in 1915, which in itself was kind of unusual. Who would like to describe Herr Rosen?
We don't ever see him. This must be an invalid or what?
We hear about, you'll get a description of him in the second 100 pages.
I think he was a glutton, maybe, and lazy.
They why he sat there and just lay there, didn't they?
He laid in a chair on the porch. Uh-huh.
Read American Westerns.
And read American Westerns. Now, isn't that, Louis L'Amour wasn't writing then. What was he reading?
Zane Grey.
Was Zane Grey back that far? Okay. Or they used to have those pulp westerns, too. Yes,
my opinion of him was that he may have had emphysema or something like that because he smoked all the time.
And he couldn't breathe.
Uh-huh, he couldn't breathe. So that they probably didn't even know about that at that time.
I think you're right on. He probably kept smoking, too.
Uh-huh. He perked up when Eva got married. And
yeah, later.
Or her engagement party or whatever that was.
That's right. Uh-huh.
You can do that, you know, sometimes for a short period of time.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and of course we didn't have any medications, again, to treat that kind of thing. Well, there were I just kind of made notes as I went along, and if you folks want to keep notes as you go along of the things that really strike you to bring to the group, please do, because that's how our discussion gets amplified a lot. There was Herr Neumeier, who was the druggist, who closed his drugstore every day for an hour and put on his tunic and carried the Virgin Mary around the square, muttering prayers. Interesting town. And then his daughter married a Protestant, lived on the same street, and they never talked again. Frau Blau, who lived next door, the Blaus you have to love. They just, Herr Blau comes in the next 100 pages in a very important way for Trudy. So be sure and watch for that. But Frau Blau just seemed like just this neat, neat lady. I'd like to sit in her kitchen any day. And then we had the Everhearts. She was the widow, and that's where Eva and Trudy, I don't know if you've gotten that far, they go because the pear orchard, and of course right now we're eating these wonderful pears, and they go to the pear orchard, and Eva dares Trudy to go pick the pears, you know, getting each other in trouble, and then of course Eva goes away. And then we get one of these premonitions that comes, and who was it that mentioned about the premonitions? Because they are throughout the book. Frau Eberhardt has a baby. Remember, her husband dies of pneumonia, and again, we're in that same flu time period. And so this baby Helmut is born, and Trudy senses the baby will destroy the mother. And it seemed like such a strange statement to be in that part. But again, just kind of remember that, because it will come back, and we'll see that again.
She didn't even want to hold him. She was, didn't Frau offer to let her hold the baby?
Well, she held him, and then she felt
that. She, yeah.
That's when she felt this chill. Uh-huh. Yeah. Now, she had another premonition when she and Eva went to the flour mill. And do any of you remember that? Because all I could visualize is those twin tower structures that we kept seeing in the paper last week. She sees the flour mill in ruins in her childhood time. Okay, so this has taken us up from 1915 to 1920. Trudy is 5 years old. So you've gotten an introduction. I'm going to let you out early today because you need to go read. Go ahead.
I was disturbed by, I'm not disturbed, but I couldn't understand the characteristics she was putting to this 3 and 4 and 5 year old child, the thinking characteristics that she was ascribing to Trudy at that early age.
She took literary license, didn't she?
Yeah, that was disturbing to me.
What can you remember when you were four? Can you remember things from when you were four?
Yeah, a few things.
Uh-huh. There's some things that stand out in my mind.
But I look at my grandchildren, and like asking my four-year-old granddaughter something. She repeated something to me that she did when she was 18 months old, and my daughter and I could say, how can she remember that, you know? So it may be that you remember at that age, but then forget when you're too.
Well, he has a great business has been made out of repressed memory.
Oh, yes.
Yes, go ahead.
I may be rushing you, but I was confused at the time of the mother's funeral, and she, and little Trudy was telling jokes. And remember, she couldn't remember.
That was priceless, wasn't it?
But how could you remember all the details of that joke at 4 years old?
Except that we know Trudy was had an very unusual ability to remember. Remember, and I don't know if it's in the first 100 pages or it's further on, she memorizes the train schedule. Is it the first 100?
Yes.
Okay. I see I've had to read ahead again. So I read this a while ago too, and I reviewed it for a while ago. So she has this ability. And then, of course, she didn't understand. It's like, how many of you have had children who've told jokes that they've heard and you've said, they start to tell this joke and you go, oh, they can't tell that joke. And then they don't have any idea, you know, what the joke is all about. And it's quite startling. It happens. This happened a lot in our house.
Interesting though is how some of the men, especially her father, seem to understand and are so gentle and kind with them. And I thought it was interesting when Leo, when she cut Georg's hair, and Leo handled the mother.
Wasn't that great? That was a really great part. She, Ursula Hege portrays the men much more generously than she does the women, I think. What, you might disagree with me, but...
Some of them.
Some of them.
Eva's husband.
Oh, well, right.
Well, and the butcher.
And the butcher, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, there will be some that we'll get into. But in the beginning, she certainly treats Leo with a very gentle hand. And he is... I like Leo. On page 40, there's a description of Frau Blau that makes me wish that... I don't know if you had a grandmother like this, but it makes me wish that I was a grandmother like this. So who would like to read about Frau Blau? Who's a grandmother who would like to read about Frau Blau? On page 40, at the very top.
From the roof came the low, moaning call of pigeons. As Trudy felt Frau Blau waiting, she was glad she didn't have a grandmother in her house. Even if grandmothers baked and ironed and knitted and grew beautiful flowers. Most houses had grandmothers in them. Grandmothers made you finish what was on your plate and told you it was not polite to spoil grown-ups. Grandmothers made you say your prayers and wash behind your ears. Grandmothers could make you do whatever they wanted because they were very old.
Okay, that's great. Thank you. So here we have the grandmother of the 1915s. How many, did any of you have a grandmother living in your house when you were growing up?
Mm-hmm.
So did I. I had two.
My grandmother was German.
Your grandmother what?
German. German,
was she really? Aha. Uh-huh. So did you get that kind of a clean your plate? My grandmother brushed my hair and taught me to knit. She was a wonderful lady. Ah, okay, see. How many of you grandmothers are teaching your granddaughters to knit?
Careless.
They couldn't, oh, take them away somewhere where they can't be near a TV. It really helps. Again, this is the passing on of the whatever we have as our heritage.
My grandchildren are teaching me how to use the computer.
Yes. Maybe it works the other way. Maybe it works the other way. Mine my grandson fixes mine for me quite frequently. Okay, on page 70. Okay, let's tell, page 73 at the bottom. We talked a little about the very beginning. You guys have to tell me your name so I can... I know you, back there.
Barb,
okay. Barb brought up about the stories. I think you're the one that brought up about stories and she listened. Would you like to read the last paragraph on page 73?
It was like that with stories. She could see beneath their surface, know the undercurrents, the whirlpools that could take you down, the hidden clusters of rocks. Stories could blind you, rise around you in a myriad of colors. Every time Trudy took a story and let it stream through her mind from beginning to end, it grew fuller and richer, feeding on her visions of those people the story belonged to, until it left its bed like the river she loved. And it was then that she'd have to tell the story to someone.
And we're going to have a lot more of that in the next 400 pages. There was one other person in this town of Bergdorf that was very important and who will come back in every now and then. And he's on the page, bottom of, well, we don't know it's a he, but we suspect it is, on the bottom of page 74. Yes. Starting with just the line below, she nodded. Who would like to read that? The bottom, the line below, she nodded.
I bet the unknown benefactor could get us, the right kind. The unknown benefactor can do anything. They both were intrigued by the unknown benefactor, whose identity was still a mystery to the people of Bergdorf, and who, despite the poverty, continued to steal into people's houses to leave his gifts like a thief who reversed the concept of thievery. The Bergdorf Post had published several articles about the unknown benefactor, each longer than the previous one, since the list of his contributions grew. A week after George's father had vanished, the unknown benefactor surprised George with the gift he wanted most in the world, Lederhosen, leather pants with leather suspenders and a leather strip across the middle of the chest, displaying a stag carved from the white core of an animal. Of course, his mother wouldn't let him wear the Lederhosen. Once you're older, she said, but she conceded to let him keep them in his room, where he took them out at least once a day to touch the thick leather.
So the unknown benefactor, and he will come back, he, she, will come back again and again throughout the book. I had one more point. Let's see. Oh, this again is about stories. On page 96, Trudy realized early on that her ability to get people to be with her or to be near her was to tell them stories. And so she said quickly to hold Eva there. She's starting to tell her this story. My father almost got killed once. And this is when Eva had talked about the cat that will come in and sleep on the softest spot and kill you. Have any of you ever had that story told to you, that you can't let a cat get near a baby because it'll suck its breath away? I don't know where those stories come from, but anyway. So Eva says, by a cat? No, a Russian bullet. It aimed right for his heart. She paused deliberately, knowing that stories took on a new power once you gave them words. They had to start inside your soul, where you could keep them for a long time. But to make them soar, you had to choose words for them and watch the faces of others as they listened. But the other soldier, she said, drawing in the current of Eva's curiosity as she once had with George, whatever, longing for her to stay, willing her to stay, the other soldier tripped. They were all in a muddy field, see? And the bullet went into my father's knee instead. Now, she doesn't really know if that happened or not, but here is the beginning. Now, she's 5 years old, but she's already a storyteller. So this is where she really starts to get her power. And for her, words are power. The other part, the other thing that I had underlined, and I really mess up my books, I don't know, contrary to what my mother taught me, I'm getting so I can really underline them very easily. She was eager to start school, but she was afraid to, because she knew that her otherness, as she calls it, would be more evident. So we start to see that as we come into this next part of the book. When her mother died, remember her father put up all the pictures of her mother in the coffin? Did you, any of you remember that from your childhood, the coffin pictures? My grandparents came from Finland, and so when the relatives would die, we would receive these coffin pictures. And we had one wonderful, I had one wonderful Halloween when I had a big party and I put coffin pictures on. Oh, that was, my friends thought it was a little weird. I thought they were great, and those pictures disappeared, and I am so sorry that they did. I loved those pictures as a child. Okay, we've gotten through the first 100 pages. We have a little bit of a picture of Bergdorf. We have an idea of Trudy, though, and the mother being gone now already. A little bit of a picture of the neighborhood. So, I'll plow on for the next 100 pages, which should take you to exactly page 200. And that will take us to 1934, which is just about the time that some of the real activity is beginning. We're going to see more problems in Germany economically in your reading, and you'll meet a lot of the same people that were in the first 100 pages again, so you'll start to become familiar with these characters. Keep yourself a list of characters, if that helps, with a couple notes about them as they come back again and again. That sometimes helps a lot in reading a book like this that has establishes a real community. And so that might be helpful to you. Any last comments on today? Yes, go ahead.
You know, one of the interesting things, and it was just briefly mentioned, was that they, the Jewish community sent their children to the Catholic school.
Yes.
Because it's
across
the street.
It was across the street, and I don't know if they more closely identified with them or what. There's no.
Well, that becomes very important, because one of the first things that comes out in the next part is the Catholic Church teaches that Jesus was killed by the Jews. But the Jews in Bergdorf were a different kind of Jew.
That's right, they were.
So that sets your stage. But that might set the stage for a lot of understanding of differentness. Okay, yeah, you'll get into that very soon. It is 3:25. Yes, go ahead.
I just had a question about the other two books you did in other years.
The first year, do you remember the name of it, Phil? It was the story. It was a very gentle story. It's the story of a minister. No, it was the story of a little boy who goes to live with his grandparents in Upper Maine, and his grandparents haven't spoken to each other for quite a long time. They compete against each other at the county fair with their different things. And they live in a place that's called, what do they call it? It's a part of, no, is it Maine or Vermont, Phil? It's gone back and forth between Canada.
Vermont.
In Canada and United States a few times. I'll think of the title. Last year we did Poisonwood Bible.
Oh.
That was hot. Poisonwood Bible. I would highly recommend that as a book, if you haven't read it, to read.
Okay.
Pardon?
Barbara Kingsolver.
Barbara Kingsolver, right. Mm-hmm. Her new one is also good, but it's totally about environment. It's a total different subject. So. Okay, class dismissed.